Okay. Hope that got your attention. Got a little glitch in there, I heard. Interesting music. Or sound. Another interesting part of this program is George Filer, who is on with us once a month, sometimes more often than that. George, of course, is the creator and editor-in-chief of Filer's Files, the world's foremost UFO weekly electronic news publication. Call it whatever you want. It comes to your mailbox if you'd like it. Subscribe for free. Full of wonderful insight, pictures, reports from all around the world. Hello, George. How are you?
Hello, Jeff. I'm doing great. Except
you've
I've been up since 4:30 this morning.
That's a long time. You're working on 19-hour days. Yeah, tell us now. George worked, and you've done this before, but it's always interesting to hear what you do during elections as a polling officer. Tell us what you did.
Well, I work in various places, but people come in, they give us, you know, their names and addresses, and essentially we check them out.
Sounds like TSA, George.
Valid voters, and they sign their name next to a voter registration, which they've signed before. The idea is that it looked roughly the same, you know, the same signature. The fellow just isn't writing an X or something.
All right.
In any case, hope to see that they're valid voters, and then they're given a ticket, so to speak, which goes up to the voting booth, and they actually vote there. Sometimes I handle those tickets with people come and vote.
But
I live in a fairly nice neighborhood, and the votes are running, you know, double for the Republicans against the Democrats. And the last election, it was pretty even. So that shows that there's unhappiness with the present administration.
Just a little.
And I think that's being shown all over the country.
Well, according to one poll, George, 50% of Americans believe that illegal aliens should be given a path to citizenship and should be legitimized and not deported. Only 37% believe that they should go back to their countries of origin and come in the front door legally and apply for residency here and then citizenship. So there's something's not right here. I don't know who they were polling or where the polling was done, but it's not healthy. Country is supposed to be a country. And you lose your border and you lose your identity with yourself. What have you got left?
Well, I have no trouble with immigrants coming into this country and essentially learning English, and they're tested to see that they don't have diseases. They're tested to see that they're not criminals. But a person who comes in illegally very likely has diseases. Very likely has some kind of criminal.
We're seeing that all the time now.
Not to mention the fact that they're liable to be terrorists.
And you there's know, that too. Seating, putting cell groups in here early. People just waiting. No, they're here. Count on it. They're here. This enterovirus D68 came in. It's a rather common virus in Central America, and it was brought up here with those thousands upon thousands of children in the children's crusade that came across. So, good luck.
And there's a lot goes on that the news media doesn't report. Closely about the Islamic State, the terrorism that they're creating, you know, over there in Iraq and Syria, where they're beheading children, crucifying people.
Oh, they throw them in the wells with their mothers and fathers, and it's just these people are not. They shouldn't be on the planet at this time in history. This is not the kind of mentality that one would expect after 2,000 plus years of cultural and social evolution. It's utterly regressive and it's inhuman. You don't do this kind of stuff. Anyway, they are. They are.
It's very frightening. And, you know, this organization has billions of dollars. And people don't realize, but you can buy a nuclear weapon for a couple of million and place it in our city and destroy our cities. You
know, it's quite doable, George. It's also, unfortunately, false flag season, and that anything, we've got villains now, and if there were organizations or power bases in this country who wanted to pull off something, they could do it and blame anybody. They used to blame Iran for everything. Now they can blame ISIS for it. So you got the perfect foil for another false flag operation. That's a common technique. Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. Okay. If you go to the center column at Rents and look for George Filer's most recent three issues, you will find them. And they come out once a week. And if you'd like to get on the list and receive these, and they're just extraordinarily well done, just write to George at M-A-J-O-R, major, star, at Verizon.net and tell him you heard him here and you'd like to get a subscription. And he'll send them to you. What are you up to now? 13,000?
Oh, we're in the 20,000.
When did this big jump happen? The last couple months? Wow, that's amazing. Good for you. 20,000. Wow. Wonderful.
Well, because of your helping us on this program, and
well, always happy to.
You've been helping us.
You got people all over the world who subscribe, and some end up contributing, which is nice. Just lots of different things.
A lot of nice telephone calls.
Yeah, well, sure.
People have worked for places like various aviation companies, and you know, I don't know if you saw that scientist Boyd Bushman from.
Yeah, what was the deal on that? The picture of the alien was claimed to be a little rubber alien kind of doll, and it wasn't real. That somebody actually had the doll. I don't know. I can't imagine Bushman.
I don't know if he grabbed that, you know, as an example of the.
He didn't make it clear
that he had seen or what.
Right.
Allegedly, that particular alien doll is much better than the other representative. But the fact is that we have an individual who's spent his life, you know, working in aviation field, very company.
Mm-hmm.
He has a wonderful resume, which I put on there to show the kind of background he has, plus the fact that he has 26 patents, plus some that are even classified that they can't reveal the names of, but I listed some of the six important ones that had to do with capabilities that UFOs have that he worked on and worked with aliens, I understand.
I was impressed with him. I liked what he said, but the little picture thing was an unfortunate wrinkle to it. I mean,
I think was something he picked up. You know.
Just as an example. Well, maybe so. Now, I'm trying to load issue number 43, and it won't load. I'm getting a black background and pictures, but not much text. I get pictures and captions, and that's it. Now, there is a picture that's very interesting, though. It's a picture, a daylight picture. It shows a naval ship in the lower left and about seven floats in the water next to the ship. You know what I'm talking about. And then under the water appears to be an enormous disc. What's the story on that picture, since I can't get the issue to load?
Well, as I understand it, it was taken by a Soviet photographer and released to us, and you know, through the KGB and all of that.
So that's a Russian ship.
Right. And it appears to be a, you know, disc under the sea of some type.
Well, I don't know what else it would be.
Fairly common that they have seen them on a regular basis, and I know I've talked to a number of naval people who have seen them, and a similar type craft, and they eventually come out of the water. You know,
that's an extraordinary picture if it's real. Let me ask you a picture of the ship itself. On the starboard side, toward the rear, there's a very large, what appears to be a splash of white water right next to the ship on the other side. I don't know what that would be. Something in the water right next to the ship exploded?
Well,
or?
The craft under the water create a lot of disturbance, particularly large. I've talked to people who've been on aircraft carriers, which are, you know, huge ships, and they say that they, you know, like, make the carrier roll and stuff with the disturbance of the craft. And it's, you know, some of them are quite large. I've had them on radar that are as large as any major bridge in the world, you know. San Francisco Bay Bridge, the radar return is essentially the same as the UFO.
That must have been amazing to see.
Now, wow. It's very difficult, particularly at night, where you see a bunch of lights in a row, like a ship at sea, to determine how big that ship is. Because it has to do with how close is it. But with the radar, you have... It measures the distance to the, you know, the object and gives you the rough size of it. So here's an object, you know, roughly a mile long, maybe half a mile long, but I'm just, you know, a tremendous vehicle of some type, which obviously was not ours. Unless we have really something secret going on.
Well, that's quite a picture. You always have some very interesting pictures. I'm going to try and load up issue number 42 and see what we get with that. 43 just doesn't want to work for me. Let's see what 42 does.
I'll resend it later to you.
Yeah, it's 43 is just a black background and pictures. That was it.
Why that would be, but you know, yeah. The internet, a lot of things happen.
Yeah, can't get 42 to move either. So, I don't know. Let's see. I'll even try 41 here.
You can always go to my website, nationalufocenter.com.
Well, that's where the link leads, right to your site.
Oh, okay. Well, sometimes we have problems.
Okay.
In fact, you just talked about it. We may be overwhelmed by people tuning in, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay,
let's
see.
You have a large listening audience.
We have a wonderful audience, and they're all around the world, and they really care about people who care about whatever they're doing. That's sort of the magic gift. Find something you like to do, and do it to the best of your ability. Yeah, I can't get your site to come up. That doesn't mean everyone else can't either. It could be just a local area issue here, so... Okay. All right. Now, so here we are into the fall. Any new reports that are particularly interesting that have come in? Now, we've got them in the files, but what about your favorites? What's going on?
Well, of course, I live in New Jersey, so it's interesting to me that we're picking up quite a few in New Jersey.
Always, George. New Jersey always has sightings. Going back as far as I've known you, I remember there is almost always something about New Jersey in Filer's Files. And these are sightings by people all over the state.
There's like a super highway along the coast called the Parkway. And frequently people traveling that road things overhead, you know, just various kinds of lights and, you know, everything in the sky that's interesting. They draw pictures of it, which are somewhere there, and one interesting thing is Nancy Talbot, who does specializes in crop circles.
BLT Research. Nancy's been a friend for a long time.
Well, she's a great lady. In any case, I sent her the files, and she saw this drawing of a New Jersey, kind of like a cross, like this shaped craft. But in any case, she said there was very similar crop circle in Massachusetts to the drawing. And just saying that we run into these coincidences quite often where, you know, somebody will make a drawing or somebody will have a picture and somebody else sees the same object, you know, North Carolina or wherever it happens to be. You know, these craft can move with clock them at 100,000 miles an hour, so they can be almost anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world in a very short time. But it's interesting when we get the people confirming that particular shape, you know, in fact, does exist in different parts of the world, in different parts of the country.
This issue of crop circles continues to every year, same thing, through the late spring, summer, and sometimes into September, I guess. Shows no signs of slowing down. Anybody have any new insights into crop formations, crop circles they call them, that you've heard?
Well, some people are trying to decide what they're saying, so to speak. What is the message, you know?
Right.
I'm not sure anybody knows for certain what the message is, but certainly we've seen crop circles that look like alien faces, you know, even alien craft, that kind of thing.
That's, right.
There's some kind of communication going on. I'm not sure we're deciphering it, but at least they're attempting to contact us. And
well, they can. Now, let's. Okay. If they're a light year away and they're sending some beam of energy that takes a long time to get here, and it comes down and magically finds a field of wheat or barley or something and makes a formation. That is that the kind of communication, or are they up there in orbit? What do people think? Are they up there in orbit and just they're kind of too afraid to come down here and knock on your door, George?
Well, Nancy's been in Holland and seen the circles actually.
Yeah, she goes over and visits Robert over there, yeah?
Yes, with her friend. And
mm-hmm.
In any case, what they've usually seen is like a ball of light or ball of fire making. Of course, where is that coming from? That could be from 100,000 miles away, or
I don't know. It's a yes.
5 feet away. You know?
People have allegedly videotaped these things. You know, they can be hoax, but I've seen the videos. And in broad daylight, there's a little white light, a little white dot moving over the field, around and around, back and forth, and then the next day, later on, there we are.
We even had the fields in New Jersey, but some can be faked. You can get out there with a board and make them and so on.
They are fakeable. And some of the pictures, when you look at them, they're not. The real ones are so perfect, it's kind of frightening when you think about it.
Yes, and they're very large.
Enormous, made at night. And you see
20,
some that are crummy.
50 people out there.
Can't do it.
All night to do that.
You can't do it.
What's the point? You know?
That's right. Can't do it. Sooner or later, somebody would talk. There have been hoaxes. There are hoaxes. And usually they're quite identifiable because they are not perfect. They have flaws. And I still can't get 43 to load now. I don't understand this. I'm seeing what my webmaster can do here. I want to talk about some of the material. Oh, it's not your fault.
In any case, as Nancy explains it, if you go out and take, wheat, and you hit it down with a board or something, in effect, break.
Oh, it's the earmarks of human interaction are quite clear and obvious. But you have what she calls exploded nodes on these things.
Where it actually, if you look at your finger and bend your finger, you'll notice that you have kind of like a node.
A knuckle.
Or a knuckle. But the
you may have nodes, George. I have a knuckle.
The crop circle continues, or the wheat or whatever, barley or whatever.
Yeah.
It continues
it's like a microwave energy source goes through the stalk, and parts of it are exploded or enlarged. It's an energetic thing. It's not somebody with a 2x4 and ropes. That doesn't work.
But it still is growing as a viable piece of wheat. In other words, it's not destroyed, where squashing it, so to speak, destroys it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other things that happen that we've noticed, that your batteries lose power within the circle.
Uh-huh.
And one interesting thing is if you take the seeds, we'll say, from the wheat in the circle, and you plant them, you know, really for next year or whatever.
Yeah.
They'll be like one-third larger and more energetic than the crop you had just been inside.
Mm-hmm.
They have amazing ability to improve the plant life.
Well, that doesn't happen from
patent.
Yeah. Oh, somebody has patented these?
Right.
Well, very interesting.
Of course,
all right.
The trick is to get the, I assume it's aliens, to do this to your crop next year. You have one-third better crop. Any case, this is...
That's interesting. One-third. Okay. Hold on a second. James reports that it looks like your server is down.
He's
back in Arkansas. So for all of you listening, do visit George's website. We'll come back in a few minutes and take a look at the current three issues and see if it's something you'd like to have delivered to your mailbox electronically.
Well, are you getting at least 43?
Not getting any. Neither can my webmaster. He's in Arkansas. So there's, I think, something wrong with the server there. Probably needs to be reset. So hopefully your guys are on it, or whoever. All right, hold on, George. We'll have to take a break. We'll come right back. I have got 43 to half load. I can see the pictures. Oh, it's 42 that loaded up. Good. Okay. 42, George, let me ask you if you can remember the top picture. Canadian writer recalls UFO sighting. That's obviously a recreation of whatever he saw. At least the object looks like a recreation. Let's scroll on down here, see what we got. Now, there's a good picture of a triangle. That's an equilateral triangle. Yeah. That's good. There's a picture of Major Filer. What are you sitting there? What kind of cockpit is that?
C-117. It's a four-engine troop carrier or cargo aircraft.
Yeah.
I flew mostly tankers and cargo aircraft, you know, big ones.
Well, what's interesting about George's career is that he did exactly as he's saying, and then he somehow got into a position of giving basically what you'd call top-secret briefings to very high-ranking generals. How did that transition occur, George? That's always fascinated me. How'd you go from one to the other?
Well, I was flying tankers in England, and that's when I had my sightings. But we were part of the, well, in case World War III occurred, of launching the tankers within like 10 minutes from the time the bell went off. And we would go in, sounds funny, first, and then the fighters would come up on us or the bombers and refuel off the tanker and then continue on into enemy territory. Well, to do all this and to be part of this, you've got top secret clearance. And it takes like 6 months to get a top secret clearance at the airport. They have to check out your background and then talk to your teachers and mother and wife and everybody.
Yeah.
In any case, so I had a top secret clearance. I'm transferred to Langley Air Force Base in the United States.
That's CIA headquarters.
I'm flying tankers, and the Cuban crisis comes along, and I'm flying tankers halfway at Cuba, and the reconnaissance aircraft, IRF-101, are refueling off of.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
And going into Cuba and picking up the fact that the Russians had put missiles in Cuba. Now, I did this a couple of days, and I get a message that they want me back at tech headquarters, that General Sweeney, report to General Sweeney's office, who's the four-star general that ran Tech Fire Command. And I go up there, you know, like, gee, I must be in trouble or something.
I'd say that. Yeah.
They said, you've been assigned as a courier for top secret and above intelligence information, which basically was the photographs taken over Cuba.
Really?
And I am to take them to General LeMay's office.
Curtis LeMay.
LeMay. So I'm going from a four-star general, essentially having all the tactical aircraft. This is other than, you know, the four-engine B-52s, but anything less than that belongs to TAC. And we're doing most of the reconnaissance at low level over Cuba. And these films are being developed, and I'm taking them up to General LeMay's office as a first lieutenant, because I was like the only one around who had this high clearance.
Did you, when you walked into LeMay's office with the package or the parcel, did you see him each time, or was there someone?
Yes.
What would he say? You salute? What would he say to you?
Well, I would salute, and he was, it was an interesting situation, because I go into the Pentagon and up to his office, and he has the most beautiful secretaries I've ever seen in the Air Force in uniform. He must have chosen, frankly, the best-looking women in the Air Force they were working for.
Well, perks.
And I was startled by what beautiful women were there. And I, the thing is, they like handcuffed it to your wrist, and you take the information into the general and open it up and handle it, hand it to him. I really didn't say much other than, you know, Lieutenant Filey reporting.
You didn't say, mighty nice looking help you got around here, General.
I hardly said anything, but he's like very, you know, we're going to bomb those guys in Cuba. He's very outspoken.
He's saying that to you.
Essentially, he says to me, tell General Sweeney if they shoot down one of our planes, we're taking that SAM site out or that airport, you know, if it's air.
Uh-huh.
If MiGs are knocking our planes down. In other words, whatever they do, we're going to respond immediately and tell Sweeney to get ready to go and have everything ready to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he's a little scary because he's, you know, very strong in his opinion.
Yes. Almost and a little crazy, it sounds like. Gung-ho.
Well, gung-ho.
Go get him. All right.
And I'm supposed to take this information back to General Sweeney, which, of course, I did.
Mm-hmm. Were you to tell General Sweeney to get his butt ready?
Well, naturally, I would say, you know, General LeMay told me to tell you.
To get ready to attack Cuba.
Right. If they do this, you know.
If they shoot one of our planes, in which they did do.
Right. And I thought we were, frankly, going to war, or, you know, at least that we would respond and knock out that same site. But apparently, President Kennedy was, in retrospect, was smarter than LeMay, or at least, you know, didn't want World War III.
No, he didn't.
Very easily could have led it to.
Yeah.
And I'm going back and forth, and they're telling me, yes, they didn't want to go send it communication-wise, because communication can be, you know, picked up.
So they told George.
I was kind of like right in the middle of everything that was going
That's
on.
That's amazing, George.
I thought I was going back and forth. Well, because of that, I usually picked up the pictures and intelligence.
Yeah, hold on, will you? We have to take a break. Hold it right there. That's a good place to pause. We'll come right back with Major George Filer in just a minute. Right in the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis is George Filer. Amazing. Tell us more, George.
Well, it was interesting, of course, that it's kind of like in a great place to be in one sense. Frankly, I didn't say much to General other than, you know, good afternoon, General, or whatever. I kind of kept my mouth shut, frankly, but I was told to say things, and I would say what the other general had to say, you know.
How interesting. And then would Sweeney say, well, you tell LeMay.
Right.
So you go back and forth.
Right. And, of course, I'm carrying, almost always, I'm carrying photographs of what was happening.
Cuba. Went, where were these offices located, Sweeney's and LeMay's? How far from each other?
Well, Langley Air Force Base in Virginia is in Hampton, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, LeMay is in the Pentagon. He's the head of the Air Force.
Would you drive yourself there?
Normally I was flown.
Huh.
On occasion, you know, the weather was real bad and raining or something. But normally I was flown back and forth. But they'd have a plane waiting for me.
What a neat thing. Wow.
That, you know, it wasn't that I was important, but the photographs were very important.
Yeah.
Because they had to be.
You never got to see the photographs, did you? Unless they showed them.
Well,
to you.
When they gave them to me, they put them in a I saw some of them.
Uh-huh.
Not close, you know.
Yeah.
But they're taking him out, putting him on the desk, that kind of thing. I could see that. I could see that there was...
Yeah. You didn't peek on the way over there.
That's kind of sad. No, all I right. didn't. Oh. Do that. There was really no good place to open it. I didn't... I was dealing with people that could have ended my career, you know, in one moment, so to speak.
Well, they could have ended much of the planet in one moment, too,
right.
if they had the go-ahead. This is all very interesting.
A couple of the most powerful people in the airport, certainly.
Absolutely.
And they were, and General LeMay was going to see President Kennedy all the time.
Yeah.
He was, well, felt that we should handle the Russians or Soviets very tough at that point, you know.
Mm-hmm. So did George Patton, and look what it got him. Did LeMay have a cigar?
Some of the time. He was a very tough man. I mean, I was... frankly, very afraid of him. But, you know, after a while, he kind of knew who I was and stuff. And that's kind of how I got into briefing generals and stuff, because they knew who I was. And,
uh-huh.
And then, after Cuban crisis was over, they disbanded our tanker outfit. And I was... and they flew some C-130s in, and I was now in a C-130 outfit. And
uh-huh.
They wanted to transfer me to Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm living in my home, and wife and everybody's there. And in any case, my wife didn't want to leave Virginia. So I went back to see Colonel Trianafello, who soon became a general, and said, you know, I would like to work in intelligence, and, you know, I got to know you people on the Cuban crisis, etc. Picked up the phone, and they said, we want Filer in intelligence.
That's great.
And within it was almost like magic, you know. then I'm with him for several years, and... I had orders to go into R-4s, which is a reconnaissance aircraft, to go to Vietnam. And the fact that I had, you know, briefed some of the generals at TAC and so on, when I got, they pulled me out of R-4s and put me into 7th Air Force headquarters, where I was briefing General S. Brown every morning. So I became known as a brief, kind of like a briefer. They like certain people, you know. It's kind of
sure,
like
yeah, understand.
The evening news, you know, you like a certain guy. And did that most of my career. And I would brief fairly often about UFOs, but it was pretty much like, you know, MUFON gets the air crew saw a UFO off its wing and it flew there for a while. You know, that kind of thing, or they intercepted one.
Was this kind of taken for granted that they were real and they were here and there was not much anybody could do about it, and you just kept them up to speed on what was going on?
Right. In other words, you know, were they a threat? I mean, they never laughed or smiled at me. They just, you know, accepted it as part of the briefing, just like your... you know, Russians now have T-72 tanks that we saw on the railroad cars, you know, yesterday, or, you know, what's going on in the war in Vietnam or the situation in Ukraine. Not too much different than you see on the news, Mike. Like, although, but they were, well, they treated it as always as it was real. Now, being that I was doing these briefings all the time, I went to the Pentagon to get better pictures of various, you know, Soviet aircraft,
mm-hmm.
newest SAM sites, and all this kind of stuff. But I had access to almost everything. And I said, well, I brief UFOs, you know, on a regular basis. I need some pictures of UFOs to, you know, that's part of my briefing.
There's did you tell them that?
Yeah, there's congressmen that come to the briefing.
And
we have four-star general briefings.
And what happened?
And they said, well, you need permission from General Canton, essentially, to see any of those UFO pictures. So when I got back to the... Now I'm in Military Airlift Command headquarters, and I wrote a letter essentially giving me permission to see this UFO data and use these pictures in the briefings. And you write the letter like the general's signing it. You know, in other words, he signs it, but you've written the letter for
him. I understand, yeah.
In any case, make a long story short, they didn't sign it. So part of the reason I think I've always been interested in UFOs is because they never really let me in on the inside secret, you know.
You were as close as you can get.
Well, I was as close as I can get, but I wasn't in on the...
Yeah.
The four stars are given the information, and they pick, well, you know, two or three other people. To, I'd say, keep track of what's going on. Those people are cleared, but I wasn't one of those. Now, I was cleared for almost everything else, but I wasn't. Everything is compartmentalized. You know, certain things are...
Yeah.
You're allowed to know, and certain things you're not allowed. I had a pretty good friend who was a three-star general, and he swore that he was never brought in on any of it. That it's kept very, you know, very secret. I know it's much higher than, like, nuclear weapons.
It was way up. It was at the top.
Right. Wilbur Smith, the Canadian... expert on UFOs, you know, admitted that when he tried to find out through the United States. In other words, he had the highest clearance in the Canadian government, and they were giving him a hard time.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a story. So how many years altogether were you doing briefings about?
Something like 14 or so.
That's a long time.
Well, you fly, and then you also have like a desk job, we'll call it.
Yeah.
And a lot of things happen, you know. I got into some things.
Is there anything right now you're restricted from talking about after these years?
Not that I know of, because I was never really... You know, you might say on the inside of it, you know, that some of these people, you know, Lockheed and so on, are releasing a lot of the inside data. And I'm not getting it from just one. I'm getting it from, well, three different people. They're all, I don't know if they know each other or not, but at least they're telling pretty much the same story. And I think there may be some books coming out about it. There's some indication there. At least the people that work for Lockheed have been given permission to talk about it. Or else they're old enough that they don't care.
They don't care anymore. That could be.
You're 80 years old and you're dying of cancer or something. I guess there's not too much of it.
No. Not at that point. Well, George, thank you for sharing that. That was really interesting, and that was great. Go get some sleep now. You had a long day, and we really appreciate you staying up.
Okay.
Okay.
You're welcome.
We'll talk soon.
We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
George Filer, really an amazing fellow. Filer's Files, if you want to get a free subscription, just write to George at Major, M-A-J-O-R, Major Star, @Verizon.net. And we'll be right back.